Welcome to Overtures. It's not every episode that I get to just spend it messing around with bits and laughing my butt off, but I'm so glad that I could do that in this episode. We had a blast messing around, and I hope you enjoy listening in. All links are in the show notes. Take your seats. We'll be starting shortly. Happy Tuesday. I hope everyone's doing very well today. Yeah, that's all I got this morning. I know I usually try and say a little bit more than that, but I don't know. Cloudy day. We do what we can. Welcome to episode 20. I'm going to start with a fun little clip to kick off our day today.
The minute you walked in the joint, I could see you were a man of distinction, a real big spender, good looking, so refined. Say, what in your life to know what's going on in my mind? So let me get right to the point. I don't pop my cork for every guy I see.
I love that clip so much. So much fun. Yes, my guest today is a 2018 Wagner grad living in New York City. She's a proud member of Equity, her most recent credit being the Bedlam Theater Company's production of King Lear. She and I have known each other for many years. She was in my first show with me at Wagner and later became my theater big. She's funny, witty, and a gorgeous human inside and out. Did I mention she's talented too? This is Santa Claire Hirsch.
Oh my god, what a lovely intro.
Thank you. Wow. I thought you'd enjoy that.
You're such a liar. That's so sweet.
I am not a liar. We watched that video. They all know the truth.
I completely forgot, but that was wasn't that my first show too? It was both of our shows, right?
I think so. I mean, I know Titanic was your main stage debut, but I don't recall whether you did student runs before I got to Wagner, but
I really think you were my first show.
Yeah.
You were my first show?
I was your first show. Yeah. Shout out to all them folks in that show. That was a packed cast now that I think about it. It was the play Next Fall by a playwright whose name I simply
Some
can't remember.
Person. Yeah.
I really don't remember. It was a good show. I think it was a lot more than I could chew at that point as an actor, but that's okay. That's okay.
Yeah.
We make it through.
Definitely one of those where, like, you knew it was a heavy subject matter and we were adults. We could handle it. But
also, I had just graduated high school.
Yeah. You're like, I'm just trying to figure out how I even got into college.
Yeah.
Like, real-life situations.
Yeah. I want to go back and read that play because, like, lots of themes, like how to be gay and still be religious or not be religious, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Like, and addiction. Stuff. Dealing with, like, addiction. I think my character is, like, I'm popping pills.
Honestly, that sounds familiar now that you say that.
Seems
That yeah. sounds horrible. I truly
it was either
remember.
That or Titanic that she was popping pills, but I can't remember which one.
You know, either one of those. It's a toss up. But yeah, as I mentioned in the bio and intro, we know each other from Wagner. And then I think after Next Fall, I don't think we ever worked on a show together.
And then we
that.
Never spoke to each other.
And then we never saw each other
again.
Ever again.
We were done.
That's
done.
It. That was it. No.
We did.
Done.
You didn't do any, like, what about for backstage stuff? For at least we worked together.
I'm trying to go back and think. I mean, I was an usher on Titanic, so I unfortunately watched you and everyone else, like, die every night.
Oh, I unfortunately watched you every night.
No, I unfortunately watched you die every night, which was not a pleasant experience, but y'all killed it every single time.
I guess we could have changed the ending and, like, one night, like, surprise, they all lived.
There was no iceberg. I'm trying to think. No, because there was a few times, which is very funny, when, like, they would come up, like, with their tickets and be like, is this like the movie? Or like, oh, I love Jack and Rose. They're like, is this like the movie? I'm like, oh, sweetie, no.
I mean, like, it's, yeah, not that exact, but isn't, they were based on, Jack and Rose was based on a couple or a few couples.
I mean,
no,
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised.
I mean, you
know. I haven't looked enough into the history of it, to be honest, but.
I did 1,000 years ago.
1,000 years ago, didn't we all?
I just remember it sank. So
that's fair.
Surprise.
Your camera's freezing on me again, which is very sad. Again, you're coming in 100% clear audio wise. It's just very funny because it keeps pausing on like fun faces.
That's embarrassing.
Which I'm sure you'll enjoy later on. But you, and now you're back. So we're good on that. So we'll just play around with it.
Yeah, maybe if I just stay really still.
Just only make really like nice just like, faces.
Yeah, I'm like, yeah. Oh, I love acting. It's my favorite thing to do.
No! Okay, no, you're good. You're good. Oh my God, that was really good timing.
Oh no.
Comedic hilarity ensues.
I can't with technology. Let me tell you, auditioning now and having to figure out how to film yourself. And
also, Devante's laughing with us. So.
Who's he?
Who's that? We love you, Devante.
I don't know a Devante.
But yeah, no. But then after working on Next Fall together, you became my theater big.
I did, and that was the proudest moment of my life. just in general.
Just in general.
I love. Yeah, I. Well, I mean, one of the main reasons why I was like, she needs to be mine. Which is creepy in a way, but I was like, you're just such a hard worker and you put so much energy into what you love. It's amazing. So I was like, well, I need to snatch that up. So that way, not so much that I can be your big and teach you anything, but more so selfishly so I can watch you and be like, oh, I need to do that. So that was really why I kidnapped you.
You're the sweetest.
Family, so.
Into the family. No, you're so sweet. That makes my heart very happy. Because also, like, I very much looked up to you, too. Just because, like, working on Next Fall together, I was like, wow, she's pulling off this crazy demanding role. This is wild. She wants me to be in her theater family? Oh, my God. Yeah. But then it was fun because then you asked me to be your little the night of Rocky Horror Picture Show sophomore year.
With the pun book.
It's somewhere. I do have it still.
Oh, good.
It was literally Santa made me this book of puns that were all like – lovely little compliments, definitely like printed in the library, stapled together.
Oh, ratchet as hell. Oh, not stapled. No artistry put into it. No drawing.
Oh, it was fantastic.
No, nasty pages printed together that I like threw at her and I was like, be my little.
But it was great because Devante, who is still watching at this moment, recorded the whole thing. So that video exists somewhere. Yeah. Yeah, it was great. And we were all dressed up for Rocky Horror, so we looked wild.
That's right. I remember I was in like a nightgown and
Yeah, I think I was wearing like fishnets, Spanx, a tank top, and a leather jacket. So like,
you know, that was like every costume choice at Wagner. Any party that there was, it was always like, okay, fishnets, booty shorts, crop top.
Devante does remember. He does remember. So he does remember being there. So thank you for being a part of that moment, Devante. We appreciate and love you.
Yes, thank you.
Oh my goodness. So getting to like the real like interviewee portion.
Oh yeah, this.
Yeah, I guess.
Right.
How did you first get started in theater?
Wow. Okay. So how did I get started? Well, the first Broadway show that I saw was Beauty and the Beast when I was 4. And I remember just being amazed because I thought it was real for one thing. So I thought like the movie had just somehow appeared and now they were real. Mm. And it was just amazing. Oh. And I wanted to be Belle so badly. And my mom was like, well, you could do that. I mean, you can do. And I was like, what? That's like a thing you can do? You can do it? Like, do it. And she's like, yeah. And so I started doing stuff at the local community theater. I was in Odessa, Texas. At the time, so like the Permian Playhouse, doing stuff like that, community theater, and I was going to summer school. And for a while, I didn't take it seriously. I was like, no, I'm going to be a pediatrician. I don't like kids.
I was like, that's so funny to me.
Surprise. I don't like kids. Also, don't do well in sciences. Math, not a strong suit, but I was going to be a
pediatrician. You were like, no, I'm going to be a pediatrician.
Because I was like, I'm not going to be an actor. That's not a real career. And I want to make money. My mom's going to be proud of me if I'm a pediatrician. What? You know, the things that you come up with as a kid, it's ridiculous. And then I found out I didn't like kids. And I was like, ooh, just kidding. Ooh. I think I started taking it seriously when I went to boarding school at Idlewild Arts Academy. And then I was like, you know what? I actually want to do this, because our days were filled where the first half was all academics. And then the second half of the day was all arts. And that was my absolute favorite time. I loved it. Just going from class to class and dance classes. I can't dance, but I loved them. Yeah. And so I think that was the start of really, truly taking it seriously and deciding to make that a career, which was a really hard choice to make. Just because I'm not good with uncertainty and, you know, yeah, right?
We were just freaking out about something earlier, like right before. And I'm like, what does it mean?
Yes, it's so true. Never knowing, like, did I get the gig? Did I not? Yeah. Or are they going to reach out? Or when will be my next gig? And how do I, you know, financially also support myself until I get that next gig?
Right.
So hard choice, but I don't regret it. Every once in a while, of course, I question it. I'm like, girl, you could have been a pediatrician. But art all the way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And was there any like one like particular moment that you were like, oh, this is what I'm going to do? Like that light bulb overture moment of sorts.
Funny enough, it was at Wagner during Trojan Women.
I love how far into the journey that is.
It really was.
Oh no, this is actually what I'm.
I know. It seems really
late.
You're
pretty committed by that point.
I know, right? Like I was like chose to go to this college, but I know so many people went in being like, "This is it. This is my thing. I'm doing it." And I was like, "Well, I like it. This is really desperately what I want to do, but I just don't." I still was fighting with myself. And I did Trojan Women, which was a wild
experience. Trojan Women 2.0.
Trojan Women 2.0, right. Because it's not even Trojan Women.
No, Charles Mee is a very different beast than Euripides.
Wow. Very different. What a play.
I will never hear... there's a song by Jessie J that you all incorporated. I will never hear that song. Yes, I will never hear that song the same way again.
Yeah. That was a show. And I think what convinced me to really do it was that I was like, this is such an insane process that's both irritating and frustrating, but also thrilling and weird and
fun. Well, you had the biggest fucking role.
And like Hecuba, like who is she? And just the depth of it. And I was like, wow, you know what? Yes. Yeah. I get it now. I get it too. I understand the passion as well and the drive. And so Trojan Women 2.0.
What a wild adventure. I remember just sitting there watching it going, what is happening? But all in the best way possible.
But also in the worst way possible. But like also.
Yes and.
Like yes and. I want to yes and that. I want to piggyback off of that.
Like the definition of experimental theater. Like.
Yeah. That was most of the audience though. I mean, I would look out into that audience and the faces in general were just kind of like. Oh, like it's a constant confusion. Mm-hmm.
He doesn't make it easy for you by any means.
No, gosh, he doesn't. And working with Teresa, of course, because she's very much like, this is a group process. I'm not going to tell you where to stand and point, you know, which was another first time for that too.
When the playwright goes, you can use this script however you want to. You can honestly cut half of it and I wouldn't care. And right? Then Teresa McCarthy, a fantastic performer and director, but also director who's like, okay, now you take it however you want. You're like, cool. So do I really have to make all these decisions?
Right? You're like, but I don't want to do all the work. And then you're like, well, you have to.
Yeah, there's that's kind of no other option.
It's very true. It did teach me that, like, you can't depend on everyone else in the cast. You can't rely on your director to give you everything, because that's also not the job. So that did teach me a lot about just making weird choices too. I have found that is like your safest bet. Honestly, just get weird with it. Go 120%.
Yeah.
So that way your director can be like, ah, I can see what you do.
Yeah.
Now let's take a back a little bit.
But it's always really funny because someone will be like, yeah, do like 1,000%. I'll pull you back. And then I do it. And then they're like, that's perfect. And I'm like, what?
You're like, you don't want to pull that back?
No, because also they were like, well, you went 80% and I liked it. So that was good. And you can keep it. And I'm like, oh, I guess I don't know how to go like over 100%.
I think that depends on a person and how you see your 100%, you know, may not be what they would consider, you know, maybe my 100% is doing the worm on the floor. I don't know why, but, and then yours is just sitting on the floor.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a personal choice, I suppose.
It really is. It really is. But I think that's really interesting that you mentioned that, talking about like making the decisions and all those kinds of things. Because like, obviously, I mean, this is a bit of a roundabout question. So I know you as an actor, a singer, solo performer, like, and a writer. So you very much have all of those opportunities to make all the choices. Mm-hmm. So getting back to the original question, how do you order all of those for yourself? Like, do you consider yourself actor singer first, or are you putting solo performer earlier in the line of things, or is writer sneaking up in there?
What an interesting question. And that's funny. I've been thinking about that actually. What do I consider myself, especially if I'm introducing myself, mm-hmm. and you get, you're like, I'm a singer, or I'm an actor, I'm a writer. I feel like I, in general, am a, okay. So
it's sorry, funny. Didn't mean it to be such a hard one, right?
No, I was like, wow. Solo performer, only because I like to create my own work. I found with auditioning and trying to fit a type can be really difficult. And sometimes, you know, you're just not right for the role, or they don't see you as the, you know.
Yeah.
And that can get tiresome, a lot of that rejection and waiting around for the right role. So I found writing my own stuff, creating my own stuff, or my own cabarets, or my own one-woman show. And I just finished writing a play that I just sent off. So I feel like I'm a solo performer, whatever that could, that's a very general
No, but thing? it leaves it open to interpretation while still like giving you enough to be like, okay, I kind of get that. Because it like solo performer, I feel like sometimes can be a bit more descriptive than perhaps like storyteller, which can go so many different ways. So I think that makes sense. To give an example of more of your fabulous acting and singing. I have a clip from Solly's Follies. I was going through it and I'm like, oh, there's several songs within this. We're going to watch the beginning of one of the final songs. I don't know the name of it, but it's fun. She's a fun little story. Oh, of course. And as soon as I do that, I click out of it. I'm going to prepare it a little bit on my end. But if you want to talk about, this is several songs all wrapped into one. So I'm assuming this is a night of several.
So Solly's Follies, Bill Solly, how many years ago was that? It was 2018-ish. He did a cabaret. Well, he wrote this really successful musical. What was it called? The Boy Next Door. The Boy, it was one of the first like gay musicals, mm-hmm. and it hit it off in the West End. It was crazy, crazy popular. And then he moved to New York and tried to make it there. And it was just a different business.
Yeah.
So he started doing cabarets and writing music. And so he wanted to do his, not all of his pieces. Cause I mean, I think he has like hundreds upon hundreds of songs that he's written.
Oh, I'm sure.
So it was just like select numbers, at Don't Tell Mama. And I think I don't know if it was his last show or one of his last shows. So it was a really, really special night. And like, you know, there's an amazing pianist, Simon Mulligan, who was playing, who's like playing for the Queen. So it was just like a really cool,
oh my gosh,
like a really cool night and great music, because he's very, it's kind of older, classic, 50s-esque vibe. I really enjoyed it. So
it looked like it was a lot of fun, and I really enjoyed this last song that was part of it. So okay, we're just gonna watch a little snippet of this.
The story of Tony and Fred. They were good friends, people said. For a long, long time, they lived together, and they slept in the same bed. Tony and Fred. They always made plans for ahead. So they fasted and they fed, and the things they did together, sharing everything from Christmas to the books they read. Tony and Fred. Then suddenly Tony died on a warm September day, when the sun was shining happily in the sky. By the time Fred reached his side, there was only time to say goodbye.
And there's so much more to the song too, but I thought that was such that you can really get a sense of like the music storytelling, yes, quality. And it's just so fun to see you like tell a story when you're singing, like you're narrating, like you're not even necessarily playing a character in that song, but you're telling the story, and it's just like so engrossing.
I love that song too, because when we started learning it, he was like, this is a true story. This piece, by the way, is a true story. It is my love affair with this man who never told his mother. And so when he died, she never knew that. And she always said, like, I wish someone loved my son. I wish someone had loved. And he's there like, I did. So that, you know, I didn't even need to act. I was like,
Literally.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So I love, I do love storytelling, though, especially with cabaret stuff. Yeah. It's so much fun. I'm working on a cabaret right now with Marilyn May, and it is so much fun to just dive into these pieces. And she is a storyteller. When you get the chance, or whoever is watching needs to look up Marilyn May and just see her perform. I mean, talk about a storyteller. She is one of those that she locks eyes with her audience. Mm-hmm. She's going to tell you how it is. You know, some singers are like, I'm going to sing here with my eyes closed, which I am definitely guilty of all the time. I love closing my eyes when I sing. I'm like, ooh, I feel the music. But she's very much of like, no, talk to your audience.
And you're like, okay.
I'm like, what? Talk to them. I'm going to pretend like they weren't there.
Yeah.
So,
but you do have a fair amount of, you still have a fair amount of experience to directly addressing your audience, which I think you understand where this segue is going to go. But we're going to take a look at Two Worlds Colliding. Do you want to tell me a little bit about the project? I'm going to pull up just like a beginning clip near the beginning, but if you want to talk about it a little bit.
Yeah, sure. So I wrote a one-woman show after going to Latvia and meeting my birth family for the first time. And it was one of those pieces that was just very raw and so, I don't know. It was heated. That's the only word that I can think of. It was just something that was like boiling inside. It needed to come out. Mm-hmm. And so these people were like, well, just write and see what happens. And it turned into a one woman show. And my director, Jake, gave me the opportunity to perform it and put it on its feet. So this clip is from that show, the first time that I put it up.
Amazing. It's just going to be a clip here from the beginning, because I didn't necessarily want to hop us in the middle of amidst the whole like context of the story. This is from near the beginning. Yes, exactly. So
hang up.
I love you. I'm hanging up. You're hung up. My mother is the most incredible and at times irritating woman in my life. Okay, all right. Hillary Clinton is a close second. My mom, Melissa, was a lawyer in Odessa, Texas for about 30 years in a totally male-dominated world. I mean, there weren't very many female lawyers when she started out, so you can probably imagine what people thought of this short woman with blonde, Farrah Fawcett hair coming through the courthouse telling people what to do. She may be short, but she is fucking scary when she is mad. Like, I have yet to win an argument with her. She is the confrontational type. I am the kind of person who, like, throws in an awkward joke at the most inappropriate of times in hopes of, like, lightening the mood. I'm not very good at confrontation.
I think that's a really awesome.
And I'm still not good with confrontation. Thank you.
That's so funny. I forgot about, I haven't watched it back because it's sort of one of those, I threw it out there and didn't want to, like, didn't go back to it.
Yeah. Like, sometimes it's like, it's sometimes it's hard to go back to it so quickly. But when you have some space in between, it's nice to sometimes watch some of those things back. The stuff about your mom is hysterical because I'm like, yep, we were both nodding our heads that entire time.
We're like, right? Yep. We were like, mm-hmm. Yeah, doesn't win an argument? Correct.
Terrifying when she's mad? Yes.
Yes.
Short little woman? Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, it's the short people. They're the scariest.
They really can be. They really can be. Oh my gosh. But yeah. I can imagine that whole process, like putting it up must have been really exhilarating, but also very scary.
Cathartic would be the word I would probably go for, just because it was this very emotional monster that I had to deal with, which was admitting to myself that it was not the perfect, just in general, like the perfect situation that I had. And then also being able to share that with other people and open up in that way was different, but felt really good too. And led me to do more with that story and to turn it into a play and to turn it into, so it opened up so many opportunities for me. But it was also very hard too and weird because I didn't really talk about it that much, even like with my friends and stuff. So then to like put it out in public and be like, okay, let me tell you how I was feeling. I was crying and there was snot down my nose and it was nasty. Like very vulnerable, but good. Like a good cry.
Absolutely.
Yes, it felt good.
Yeah. And just to like provide like, because like I know a fair amount of the context, you were adopted at a young age. And so this was seeing your family, many of them for the first time in person.
All of them. Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So yeah, very powerful stuff. And I have some really awesome Instagram questions pertaining to these kinds of things. And this kind of, I might have already like trampled this question a little bit, but Chris, who's a very loyal watcher of the show and submits questions all the time, said it must have been very tough to make a very personal life event into a one-person show. What made you do it? And I think we kind of talked about that a little bit, where you were saying that the emotions were such that it was like, I need to do something with this.
Yeah, actually, Chris, that's a really good question. It was kind of that. It was one of those, I just have to get it out there. But you know what also really helped? Other people pressuring me to do it because you have to sometimes have those people that are like, just do it. Stop saying you're going to do it and just do it.
Yeah. I can think of a few that from Wagner who, who provided those pushes.
Mm-hmm. And I think I needed that too. Because perhaps maybe had I not been pushed, it would have been a very inner solo thing that only I knew about. So the pressure of others, and then also just the need to like get it out of here onto the paper. So that way I could, it's like a therapy. It's like therapy.
Yeah.
Kind of, I guess.
In a bit of very open form of therapy.
Everyone can see your flaws kind of therapy. It's great. It's really healthy.
Yeah. Very, very healthy. Hair flip, hair flip. Oh my gosh. And I'm going to preface this next one by saying that Chris also DM'd me this question because he said it didn't really fit into the Instagram question box. It's very in-depth, but it's also a really fabulous question. So he was starting by saying like common element of your resume, like looking through it, is the concept of biography and where like the spotlight is on like a single character rather than like the full tale of an event. So like in looking at like Mile Long Opera 9, Two Worlds Colliding, and even Bikers and Camelot, very like biography in a way. And he's like, I might be reading too much into this, so don't worry about it. But he said, does the concept of biography have a particular significance to you? Or is every production in essence a biography of someone? I know, I'm so sorry.
Biography. Well, I mean, like truly basing something off of someone, or
I think so. Yes, talking or like maybe I'm trying to think. Perhaps based on real people.
I mean, generally, that's so interesting. I always have a huge fear of actually portraying a real person that existed.
Which is funny considering like Titanic, for example.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And yeah. Oh God. Yeah. Really Titanic. I wasn't too scared that like Ida Strauss was going to come back and beat me with her cane, but because I'm so worried about not doing someone justice or not fully, or somebody being like, what? She didn't talk like that. You know, I am of them. I like creating a character from nothing. I mean, and in my case, like with my play, it was me. So that was maybe a bit easier to get into, a little bit of a cheat. But like Bikers and Camelot was a totally original new character, hadn't been developed, wasn't out there. And so I was able to sort of make her real. Mm. But when something is based off of a real person, I have had a few auditions where it's, and it is a little spooky because you can do all this research on someone and follow their facial techniques, or whatever, but to actually do them justice and to enjoy that process is a very scary thing, I suppose. I don't think I answered that question at all.
I think talking to it is still interesting and helpful.
Biography.
No, but that's okay because like there's like I'm trying to think. There's like I think it's just called like biographical theater or like I should remember this with my graduate degree, like the very like documentary theater, for example, where it's like you are saying the specific things that other people have said. And there's like a certain amount of responsibility to, and this isn't even necessarily talking about like you're working on things anymore, but I think it's interesting how like documentary theater has this specific responsibility to like portraying it exactly how it was, despite that it's a completely different human. And so everything's going to come across and be read very differently.
Yes.
But then there's also like Bikers and Camelot, which is a like an original musical where you're like, cool. All I have is this text, but I have zero backstory and I can write all of it myself.
Yeah.
Two very different responsibilities for an actor.
Or I think of like six. Like they're all based off of real women. These are all the wives. And we've all, well, maybe not we've all, but I certainly, having come into it, I had my expectations. I was like, I know how I feel about Anne Boleyn. I know how I feel about Catherine. I have these feelings because I know history and I've looked into it. But these women come on stage, and though they are based on real people, very much created these women that I did not expect at all. I mean, of course, it's a musical, and you know, you come with all of that as well. But there is power to that, though, too, of being able to take a true historical event, a real person, and make it your own, make it almost like a whole new person. And I think six does a really good job with that.
Yeah. And I think there's also like, even you were writing your own show about your own self and feelings and things like that. But I think there's also that fun place where you're like, well, I can also tweak that, even though it was my history and my,
100%. The amount of tweaking I did to my show.
And you're like, the one that I'm happen, but wouldn't it be fun if it did?
Oh,
wouldn't it be
100%.
So much easier for dramatic purposes?
Yes, but you do kind of have to think of that too, because not to say what happened was not exciting, But if you're gonna put it on stage and you want people to see it,
yeah, maybe the thing that this person said that made you angry was just packed a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Maybe there were just a few more curse words in there. Yeah. Maybe they got their finger in your face, and maybe there was a fight.
Exactly.
Yes, so I think tweaking.
Yeah, I think that's a fun conversation around biography and how actors get to play with it.
Yeah. I could not hit that question head on.
So no, that's okay.
Around it.
No, that's totally okay. Chris. I think he was very interested and intrigued. So all good on that. But yeah, so you are in fact currently the owner of a theater company.
Tell
me a little bit about this.
I am. So my theater company, it's Idiosyncrasy Theater Company, which I look back at it now and I'm like, wow, that's hard to spell. But I had it. When did I start it? Well, now I've had it.
You're like
well over a year, and it's kind of been sitting there because I've been trying to find projects to do under its name. And of course, dealing with all the documents and all that fun stuff.
Right. You're officially business wise. I do in fact have this.
I technically do have a theater company. It is under my name. Now, what to do with it? The original goal was I wanted to do shows that. How did it actually start? I was talking to Michelle Pock about this. Actually, I was saying you don't really see that many plays with like. An older woman and a younger woman just sort of having a conversation or letting there be drama. I don't know. There's not, I'm not seeing a lot of stuff with a real human connection between women, but specifically the age gap and them talking to each other as well. You see that in, what is it? Three tall women. The women. No, that's another
the
thing.
Women. Like three sisters, three tall women.
Three sisters.
It's always three and women.
Always three. I'm like, what about the two? What happened to the two? So the company started with me being like, you know what? I'm going to put out work that I want to see women in. So I want to see women in their 60s doing this with a young woman who's 14. That was the original idea, doing stuff that I'm not seeing, which I still want to do. I of course have to figure out the logistics as
pandemics have gotten the way
and it's... pandemics, you know, but I am really hopeful. I have a few things already kind of situated with it.
I love that.
But there may be some casting soon. So I might have to put that out there.
Absolutely. Anytime you have things, send them my way. I will share it with overtures and beyond just so people can know about it and all that good stuff.
Yeah, I think it'll be really fun. But it would be female dominated, not to say, of course I will cast men. Of course. I'm not like, screw you. Absolutely not. But I want to see women female identifying too. I want to see that on stage. I want to see a lot of that. So that is my hope with Idiosyncrasy.
That's so exciting. I'm so excited to hear more about this because I know we had gotten to chat about it a little bit. We had lunch, like, what is it? Like a month ago now?
Like, what was it? I don't know what today is.
I truly don't even know. It's March 1st. Like, that's wild already.
Wow.
But like we had lunch like maybe like a month or two ago now. And just like, it was so funny how we were like, cool, bullet point our lives. Cool. Didn't get in depth with like anything. So it's fun to hear more about this because I'm so excited for you. And I think this is going to be some really great projects.
It's exciting. And I think this is where I'm wanting my career more or less to go to, is my own stuff, being in charge of, you know, creating without having to change myself or try to fit a type. Because that's hard too, finding your type or what that even means.
Yeah, what the hell does finding a type mean?
I don't understand.
Like we can take a brief detour just to talk about this.
Please, can we actually?
Yeah.
Let's take a moment.
Let's take a moment to talk about typing.
Yeah.
It's insane. And it's so funny to move from, because like even like in high school, you get into like, well, you're a mature high schooler, so you're gonna take on all these mother-like roles. Mm-hmm. And then you move on to college and then they're like, no, you're literally an 18-year-old child. So no, of course not. And even within college, you still get into that microcosm of like, oh, well, of your age group in this college, you type into these roles and then you're back out into the world again. And I'm like, oh,
what am I?
What am I? Right. Absolutely. So like, I know we were talking about like the show Something Rotten earlier, but when like in college, I sang a song for B, who is like Nick Bottom's wife. And she is pregnant in the show and like she has this whole grand thing going on. It's great. But like in the real world, I type for like, say, Portia, who's like realistically my age or like part of the ensemble. And so it's just so funny to me how like we get stuck in that in educational settings. But we have to, I think there needs to be a reminder. It's like realistically outside of college.
Yes.
You're not going to play these roles for many more years.
No, absolutely. I completely agree. I've had this conversation many a time. I think there's benefit to playing things that maybe would never, ever, ever make sense in school.
True.
Like me playing Ida Strauss, who is 60-something. Like
in a wheelchair. Like.
Yeah. And like that was the same. You know, I always played grandmas and moms. And even like when all your classmates would do the typing things, like motherly always showed up on mine.
I'm like, no, you're like, I'm like sassy, brassy.
But I'm like, not.
No, sassy and brassy.
But it tells you a lot about yourself too if you can pull that and use that in a role that would never. You know, I'm obviously not going to be playing Ida Strauss, but I can understand human emotion and the love of someone and dealing with trauma. And, you know, there are things that you can work with. So in that way, I guess it's great. But this idea of typing and making it an open word too, I feel like we need to change the conversation or like change because I think there's almost, I judge that there is a negative connotation to typing. Now I'm saying typing, I'm thinking of somebody typing. But like typecasting, let's say, or saying that that's normal.
Well, and even like in casting calls when people get typed out of a role and things like that. Like I think it has developed a very negative connotation when I think maybe the word that we're looking for is essence.
Yeah, essence works. They're like, what is that? Like, yeah.
Yeah, what does that mean?
Like, I get it. But
like,
yeah.
I don't know. It's just like personality and being a human. Like, it's a lot of, I think, of when you as a human, when someone walks into a room, you have an idea of who they might be based on the energy they give, which we can't quantitatively put anything on.
Absolutely not, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think that plays a huge part of it. And we just have strange vocabulary for
it. We do. It would be nice not to be like, oh, well, what type are you? Or I'm ingenue or I'm this. And it's like,
yeah,
you're a human. And I'm how a human. Somebody, like how somebody portrays Elsa, for example, all these like, Elsa is, I think, considered like a strong woman who's scared but powerful and there's a wall. And I'm like, wouldn't it be so much fun though, instead of assuming that that's her type or who she is, if like some wild, crazy girl played Elsa and was just wackadoodle, but like, but then sings Let It Go, like she is about to literally let it go. And like, I just wish people would play with that more rather than trying to get stuck in a type.
Yeah. Being like what if, like if we're going more with even Frozen, like what if like Anna, what if Anna was like more reserved and nervous and like conservative about all of this, despite having these exact same lines.
Yeah, exactly. It's just
playing
just
with those kinds of things.
Yeah. That they're supposed to be a certain way. And
now granted it, like, of course the fact that the movie does exist
that
helps
create
a precedent for the of stage course. Productions and so on and so forth. But damn, I want to see a production like that. That'd be so fucking fun. Like,
wouldn't that be so like wild
it'd,
and
it'd
just
be so
do something different. I don't know.
Exactly. Yes.
It's like I
also
wanna...
we would kill it at that as that exact concept, which is really
oh my
fun.
God.
I'm
we
like,
could do
oh
it.
Boy. Because you could do the wackadoodle Elsa and I could be all the very nervous Anna. So, like, I don't know. I'm just throwing this out there.
Yes. We could sell tickets. We got this.
Exactly. Guys, keep your eye out.
And it's just a two-woman show, too. There's nobody else in it. It's just us singing just all of the parts.
Your Hans would be devastating. Mm.
Wow. I see it. I'm ready. I'm ready.
I'll play Sven. It's going to be great.
I'm like, is there an Olaf? Like,
Who knows? Mm. Maybe it's a puppet. Who knows? Exactly. Before we start planning a whole grand
thing. I know, I'm ready.
I know you're also currently, when you submitted the form for, so I could get all your info to like have you here on the show. You were saying you were currently editing a one woman cabaret. Is this currently in the editing process? Are we at the end or where are we at?
So yeah, the cabaret is currently, it's still in the works. I am still working with Marilyn May on it. We're trying to find a time. It'll probably be at Don't Tell Mama to start off with.
Yay.
We're trying right now. We're in the process of like how to mesh some songs together, where to play some. It's just the logistics of it, just figuring that out. But it's super fun. I love it. She's so much fun to work with.
Does it have any particular like theme, storyline, et cetera?
Yeah. So the theme is love. And it was one of those that I was not attracted to the theme at all. I was like, gross.
You're
love,
like,
really? Screw that. Hate that. but I really love so many love songs. They're really, really good. So like Secret Love, which is so good. Or I'm Confessing That I Love You are just like really, really good old songs with, I mean,
even just like My Funny Valentine. Like,
yes, they're beautiful. Mm-hmm. So I started with that concept and brought it to her and we started working together and it was going really well. But I was like, there's just something kind of missing because it's just so lovey-dovey and that's not me necessarily. So finally we figured out a way to make it about love, generally speaking, the love of an inanimate object. I love a piano.
Yes.
Crazy love, like in Hamilton, the You'll Be Back. Like stalker love, or maybe combining that with On the Street Where You Live, making it a little bit like I love you.
No, I agree with that, and we could have a whole conversation about that too. But I'll let you
that song on. Specifically. Oh, 100%. I don't want to give away what I'm doing to the song.
It is a stunning song, but at the same time, in context, I still don't know if it lands.
Yeah, you're like, I'm sorry, sir. You're literally walking up and down her street.
Well, also, we meet him for maybe 3 minutes in both My Fair Lady and Pygmalion, like. As someone who is in Pygmalion, I could have a whole conversation about Freddie. I don't know how I feel about him, but also he's not Henry, so like I guess that's fine too.
Just like unhealthy, just unhealthy relationships.
Yeah, I mean, look, George Bernard Shaw didn't want it pretty. He was like, he's like, here's an epilogue. Damn it, quit messing with the end of my play. But anyway,
God. But I do want to turn these. I think that is where I found
Philippa
the little niche is like, though it's love. It's not all the cute little chocolates and roses.
I love it. I love it. I'm so excited to hear more
about
this. I'm
excited about it. I hope
And then you're also writing a two-woman show that is going to have a reading this year?
It's done. So it's been sent out. It's gone out into the world. It's been sent to the editing people. It's the director, some of the actors that I want in it. It's like... Oh, it's so out there. I'm like, I'm so excited, but also I hate this feeling too. I hate sending my work out for the first time, especially writing. I'm a semi-competent writer, but the moment it leaves my hands and someone else is looking at it, I hate it. I dread it. So I'm
Devontae's
like
applauding.
I should send it to Devontae. I'm in this like, it's out there. It's done. I don't have control over it anymore. Now they have to do it.
Do the thing.
So
yeah.
There should be, now that it's out there, there's probably going to be a reading fairly soon. which I'm like, I'm so excited because it's been something I've been working on for, gosh, I think I started writing it like right after I did the one woman show. So this has been a few years. So it needs to get out there. It's ready. Yeah. I'm just also terrified. Like it, I am so much more confident going out and singing and performing, but the moment someone is reading my words, I'm like, shut up.
You're like, I know it's bad. I'm sorry.
You're like, yes, I'm literally apologizing all the time. I'm sorry. That was stupid, wasn't it? It was really stupid. It wasn't funny, was it? And they're like, it's funny. It's fine. I'm like, it's really terrible, isn't it? You don't have to lie to me. Is it bad? It's the same with whenever I cook for someone. I'm always like, you hate it, don't you? It's just like anxiety.
Yep. Just like through the roof.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Can you talk a little bit about what the show is about and maybe perhaps the title?
Yeah. Ooh, title. I know. So the title is currently Some Clever Title. That is literally the title of it now. I love that. Some Clever Title.
Good.
And it's a follow-up from my one-woman show, except now it's a two-woman show. So I guess every year I'm just going to add one woman to my shows.
Love it.
This is specifically about my relationship. I mean, this is, well, it's about my relationship with my mother during that process. Mm-hmm. Because the first one-woman show is really about like me, what I went through, what I saw. Whereas this one is more of kind of the less romantic version of what we both were going through emotionally, and in our own relationship and our relationship to my birth sister.
Right. Cause she went with you on this trip.
And she went with me. Right. And, it's not, obviously it's not all true. There has been a lot that has been edited and changed, of course, for, you know, dramatic purposes, but I am excited about it because there's a lot of referencing to the audience and talking to the audience in this. And
that is aside.
Really, yeah, it's really important to me. I'm one of those, either you pretend like the audience is not there at all and you're in your own little world, or always be aware that they're there. I don't know. I feel like those are the only two. There can't be like a middle.
I think that's why I really adore Shakespeare's comedies. Mm-hmm. And granted, it does happen in some tragedies too, but I think there's always this sense that the Shakespeare characters always seem to know that everyone is out there.
Yeah.
And I think that's a huge part of that.
And I like that because, I mean, honestly, why pretend like there aren't hundreds of people sitting out in an audience staring at you? Like, they're there.
Give them a wink.
Give them a little wink, a little nudge. So in my play, I very much wanted to bring them and make them get involved. Obviously, I'm not bringing them on stage. I hate when people bring me on stage when I'm from an audience. Let me just point that out. But it is getting them involved in it, because I think that's important if you also feel like you are involved in the process of what these actors are going through.
No, totally.
So, A Clever Title is the name of it. And it's about, I guess, the general gist. It's a mother-daughter relationship.
I love that.
The ugly stuff, the beautiful stuff, the stuff, you know?
Yeah. No, I get that. I'm so excited. I'm sure it's very possible that we don't have them yet, but do we have any ideas or details about the when's, where's, how's of the reading? Or is that stuff that is to be determined and announced?
So it would first be a Zoom.
Cool.
We just started March. I would say probably end of March, beginning of April-ish for Zoom. And then I do want to get it on its feet. I have some people in mind that I want to be in it. Somebody you know.
Ooh.
So hopefully I can get her to commit. And then it'll just be, I think first Zoom, get people invested in it, and then put it on its feet, find a studio, and kind of just run with it and see how it goes. And then I would put it under probably the
your theater company. Yay. Mm-hmm. We love that. Well, so, as soon as you have all the details of all the different things you got your hands in at the moment,
I know it's all my way. It's all very like
ethereal.
It doesn't feel like it's here on earth, but
no, that's okay.
Somehow
it is.
I guess that's the other issue with being an actor, is everything's always like
You're like,
I don't know. Unless you like truly book a gig and they're like, this date to this date.
But otherwise... Well, and even then it's like, do you accept your role? And then they're like, cool. Well, now you can't talk about it till you have the contract.
Yes.
And
you're like, mm. I know. You're like, why can't I talk about it? I'm proud of it.
I'm proud of it. I want to talk about it.
Right.
So yeah, no, I totally get that. But it's crazy. We're already at 157. We're kind of like nearing the hour long situation going on here.
Talk to your ears off.
Exactly. Just talking all the ears. But yeah, where can people find you? Social medias, all that good stuff.
Yeah, I'm still a Facebooker. I mean, apparently that's not cool. Devante tells me Facebook basically is not cool anymore.
I literally am like a Facebook event, and then I have to text everyone being like, hi, I invited you to this Facebook event. Will you please read it? I have no other better place to put Facebook events. Right? So like,
I know. It's like it's Instagram now, I guess. Instagram.
I'm such an event planner though, and that's so difficult to do over Instagram.
Yeah,
I'm like,
no.
I need them to build a platform for that. Just like that's it.
They should. I like Eventbrite. But yeah, you can find me on Facebook. I don't know, Instagram. I have a website, SantaClaire.com. Specifically like that though. When you write it, you have to put it with that thought.
Devante's putting our mind at ease. He says, stop, lol, Facebook is fine.
Interesting.
You're like, I'm gonna have to bring that up later.
I'll talk about that later.
But I believe Instagram is at Santa Sanita.
Santa Santita. Because that was my Santita was my nickname in high school.
I love that.
Little Santa, which is so funny because my friend Anna, who's like dear to me, would be like Santita. I look down and you're like, girl. But girl, I like it. It stuck. Santa Santita.
I love that. And then obviously all the clips that I pulled, I believe they're all on YouTube from YouTube. So go find Santa on YouTube. Go watch all the things. Watch the full versions of them.
And when I when I start casting too, I will probably be putting that on my website. And that'll be a whole thing, and I can send that out once that's ready, because I would really like to see some people audition too.
Absolutely amazing. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Laura_Mardrum. More Instagram than Twitter. I don't really use my Twitter. Website is www.lauramardrum.com. you can find the show on Instagram at Overtures Show. There's two S's, but it is right. And that's where I post all the updates on future episodes, so please check that out. Appreciate that. Give it a follow. And then if you're watching this episode, congrats, you found the YouTube.
You found it.
Like, subscribe, comment, all that good stuff. It helps. So yeah. But Santa, Devante said yes.
He's too involved in this.
He is, but it's okay. He's the only one watching at the moment. So we love an active participant.
Yes, Devante. Yes. Active participation.
Yes, exactly. Santa, do you have any final thoughts for viewers live and in the future?
Ooh, final thoughts. My only thing would be, if you really love something, at least pursue it, or at least try. If you don't try, then you're going to regret it. And it may suck, or it may be really hard, but honestly, if something's really easy, is it worth it? That sounds weird, but like,
no, but
it's supposed to be hard, and that's okay. And if you struggle through it, that's great. But pursue. And,
I'm trying to figure out my camera.
I live for that.
So and with that.
And thank you, Laura. Yes. Thank you so much. This was so much fun. I'm so glad I love talking to my little.
I love talking to my big. I'm so glad that we got to chat over here. But yes. Goodbye, everyone. Bye, Devante. And then bye, everyone watching in the future. We'll see you later.